Chapter 139. I must not hear this, apostrophe cried the young lady, striving to repress a shudder, occasioned, as it seemed, even by this slight allusion to Arthur Gride. This evil, if evil it be, has been of my own seeking. I am impelled to this course by no one, but follow it of my own free will. You see, I am not constrained or forced. Report this, apostrophe said Madeline, to my dear friend and benefactor, and, taking with you my prayers and thanks for him and for yourself, leave me forever. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not until I have besought you, with all the earnestness and fervor by which I am animated, apostrophe cried Nicholas, to postpone this marriage for one short week. Not until I have besought you to think more deeply than you can have done, influenced as you are, upon the step you are about to take. Although you cannot be fully conscious of the villainy of this man to whom you are about to give your hand, some of his deeds you know. You have heard him speak, and have looked upon his face. Reflect, reflect, before it is too late, on the mockery of plighting to him at the altar, faith in which your heart can have no share of uttering solemn words, against which nature and reason must rebel of the degradation of yourself in your own esteem, which must ensue, and must be aggravated every day, as his detested character opens upon you more and more. Shrink from the loathsome companionship of this wretch as you would from corruption and disease. Suffer toil and labor if you will, but shun him, and be happy. For, believe me, I speak the truth. The most abject poverty, the most wretched condition of human life, with a pure and upright mind, would be happiness to that which you must undergo as the wife of such a man as this. Apostrophe, apostrophe, long before Nicholas ceased to speak, the young lady buried her face in her hands, and gave her tears free way. In a voice at first inarticulate with emotion, but gradually recovering strength as she proceeded, she answered him. I will not disguise from you, sir, though perhaps I ought, that I have undergone great pain of mind, and have been nearly broken-hearted, since I saw you last. I do not love this gentleman. The difference between our ages, tastes, and habits, forbids it. This he knows, and knowing, still offers me his hand. By accepting it, and by that step alone, I can release my father who is dying in this place, prolong his life, perhaps, for many years, restore him to comfort I may almost call it affluence, and relieve a generous man from the burden of assisting one, by whom, I grieve to say, his noble heart is little understood. Do not think so poorly of me, as to believe, that I feign a love I do not feel. Do not report so ill of me, for that I could not bear. If I cannot, in reason or in nature, love the man who pays this price for my poor hand, I can discharge the duties of a wife. I can be all he seeks in me, and will. He is content to take me as I am. I have passed my word, and should rejoice, not weep, that it is so. I do. The interest you take in one so friendless, and forlorn as I, the delicacy with which you have discharged your trust, the faith you have kept with me, have my warmest thanks. And, while I make this last feeble acknowledgement, move me to tears, as you see. But I do not repent, nor am I unhappy. I am happy in the prospect of all I can achieve so easily. I shall be more so, when I look back upon it, and all is done, I know. Apostrophe, your tears fall faster as you talk of happiness, apostrophe said Nicholas, and you shun the contemplation of that dark future which must be laden with so much misery to you. Defer this marriage for a week. For but one week. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he was talking, when you came upon us just now, with such smiles as I remember to have seen of old, and have not seen for many and many a day, of the freedom, that was to come tomorrow, apostrophe said Madeline, with momentary firmness, of the welcome change, the fresh air. All the new scenes and objects that would bring fresh life to his exhausted frame. His eye grew bright, and his face lightened at the thought. I will not defer it for an hour. Apostrophe, these are but tricks and wiles to urge you on, apostrophe cried Nicholas. I'll hear no more, apostrophe said Madeline, hurriedly. I have heard too much more than I should already. What I have said to you, sir, I have said, as to that dear friend to whom I trust in you honorably to repeat it. Some time hence, when I am more composed and reconciled to my new mode of life, if I should live so long, I will write to him. Meantime, all holy angels shower blessings on his head, and prosper and preserve him. Apostrophe, she was hurrying past Nicholas, when he threw himself before her, and implored her to think, but once again, upon the fate to which she was precipitately hastening. There is no retreat, apostrophe said Nicholas, in an agony of supplication. No withdrawing. All regret will be unavailing, and deep and bitter it must be. What can I say, that will induce you to pause at this last moment? What can I do to save you? Apostrophe, nothing, apostrophe she incoherently replied. This is the hardest trial I have had. Have mercy on me, sir, I beseech, and do not pierce my heart with such appeals as these. I hear him calling. I must not, will not, remain here for another instant. Apostrophe, if this were a plot, apostrophe said Nicholas, with the same violent rapidity with which she spoke, a plot, not yet laid bare by me, but which, with time, I might unravel, if you were not knowing it, entitled to fortune of your own, which, being recovered, would do all that this marriage can accomplish, would you not retract? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, no, no. It is impossible, it is a child's tale. Time would bring his death. He is calling again. Apostrophe, it may be the last time we shall ever meet on earth. Apostrophe said Nicholas, it may be better for me that we should never meet more. Apostrophe, for both, apostrophe replied Madeline, not heeding what she said. The time will come when to recall the memory of this one interview might drive me mad. Be sure to tell him that you left me calm and happy. And God be with you, sir, and my grateful heart and blessing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she was gone. Nicholas, staggering from the house, thought of the hurried scene which had just closed upon him, as if it were the phantom of some wild, unquiet dream. The day wore on. At night, having been enabled in some measure to collect his thoughts, he issued forth again. That night, being the last of Arthur Gride's bachelorship, found him in tip-top spirits and great glee. The bottle green suit had been brushed ready for the morrow. Peg Sliderskew had rendered the accounts of her past housekeeping. The 18 pence had been rigidly accounted for. She was never trusted with a larger sum at once, and the accounts were not usually balanced more than twice a day. Every preparation had been made for the coming festival, and Arthur might have sat down and contemplated his approaching happiness, but that he preferred sitting down and contemplating the entries in a dirty old vellum book with rusty clasps. Well a day! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he chuckled, as sinking on his knees before a strong chest screwed down to the floor, he thrust in his arm nearly up to the shoulder, and slowly drew forth this greasy volume. Well a day now, this is all my library, but it's one of the most entertaining books that were ever written. It's a delightful book, and all true and real, that's the best of it, true as the Bank of England, and real as its gold and silver. Written by Arthur Gride. He. None of your storybook writers will ever make as good a book as this, I warrant me. It's composed for private circulation, for my own particular reading, and nobody else's. He. Apostrophe, muttering this soliloquy, Arthur carried his precious volume to the table, and, adjusting it upon a moldy desk, put on his spectacles, and began to pore among the leaves. It's a large sum to Mr. Nickleby, apostrophe he said, in a dolorous voice. Debt to be paid in full, 975.43. Additional sum as per bond, £500. 1,475 pounds, 4 shillings, and 3 pence, tomorrow at 12 o'clock. On the other side, though, there's the per contra, by means of this pretty chick. But, again, there's the question whether I mightn't have brought all this about myself. Faint heart never won fair lady. Why was my heart so faint? Why didn't I boldly open it to Bray myself, and save 1475.43? ... These reflections depressed the old usurer so much, as to wring a feeble groan or two from his breast, and cause him to declare, with uplifted hands, that he would die in a workhouse. Remembering on further cogitation, however, that under any circumstances he must have paid, or handsomely compounded for, Ralph's debt, and being by no means confident that he would have succeeded had he undertaken his enterprise alone, he regained his equanimity, and chattered and mowed over more satisfactory items, until the entrance of Peg's Lidersky interrupted him. Aha, Peg! ... said Arthur, what is it? What is it now, Peg? It's the fowl, replied Peg, holding up a plate containing a very little one. Quite a phenomenon of a fowl. So very small and skinny. A beautiful bird. ... said Arthur, after inquiring the price, and finding it proportionate to the size. With a rasher of ham, and an egg made into sauce, and potatoes, and greens, and an apple pudding, Peg, and a little bit of cheese, we shall have a dinner for an emperor. There'll only be she and me and you, Peg, when we've done. ... Don't you complain of the expense afterwards, said Mrs. Lidersky, sulkily. I am afraid we must live expensively for the first week, returned Arthur, with a groan, and then we must make up for it. I won't eat more than I can help, and I know you love your old master too much to eat more than you can help, don't you, Peg? Don't I what? Said Peg. Love your old master too much, no, not a bit too much, said Peg. Oh, dear, I wish the devil had this woman. ... cried Arthur. Love him too much to eat more than you can help at his expense. At his what? Said Peg. Oh dear, she can never hear the most important word, and hears all the others. Whined Gride. At his expense, you catamaran. The last mentioned tribute to the charms of Mrs. Lidersky, being uttered in a whisper, that lady assented to the general proposition by a harsh growl, which was accompanied by a ring at the street door. There's the bell, said Arthur. Eh, eh, I know that, rejoined Peg. Then why don't you go? Bawled Arthur. Go where? Retorted Peg. I ain't doing any harm here, am I? Arthur Gride in reply repeated the word bell as loud as he could roar, and, his meaning being rendered further intelligible to Mrs. Lidersky's dull sense of hearing by pantomime expressive of ringing at a street door, Peg hobbled out, after sharply demanding why he hadn't said there was a ring before, instead of talking about all manner of things that had nothing to do with it, and keeping her half pint of beer waiting on the steps. There's a change come over you, Mrs. Peg, said Arthur, following her out with his eyes. What it means I don't quite know, but, if it lasts, we shan't agree together long, I see. You are turning crazy, I think. If you are, you must take yourself off, Mrs. Peg, or be taken off. All's one to me. Turning over the leaves of his book as he muttered this, he soon lighted upon something which attracted his attention, and forgot Peg's Lidersky, and everything else in the engrossing interest of its pages. The room had no other light than that which it derived from a dim and dirt-clogged lamp, whose lazy wick, being still further obscured by a dark shade, cast its feeble rays over a very little space, and left all beyond in heavy shadow. This lamp the money lender had drawn so close to him, that there was only room between it and himself for the book over which he bent, And as he sat, with his elbows on the desk, and his sharp cheekbones resting on his hands, it only served to bring out his ugly features in strong relief, together with the little table at which he sat, and to shroud all the rest of the chamber in a deep sullen gloom. Raising his eyes, and looking vacantly into this gloom as he made some mental calculation, Arthur Gride suddenly met the fixed gaze of a man. "Thieves! Thieves!" apostrophe shrieked the usurer, starting up and folding his book to his breast. "Robbers! Murder! Apostrophe, what is the matter?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the form, advancing. "Keep off!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the trembling wretch. "Is it a man or a apostrophe, for what do you take me, if not for a man?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, was the inquiry. "Yes, yes," apostrophe, cried Arthur Gride, shading his eyes with his hand. "It is a man, and not a spirit. It is a man. Robbers! Robbers! Apostrophe, for what are these cries raised? Unless indeed you know me, and have some purpose in your brain?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the stranger, coming close up to him. "I am no thief." Apostrophe, what then, and how come you here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Gride, somewhat reassured, but still retreating from his visitor. "What is your name, and what do you want?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, my name you need not know, apostrophe, was the reply. "I came here, because I was shown the way by your servant. I have addressed you twice or thrice, but you were too profoundly engaged with your book to hear me, and I have been silently waiting until you should be less abstracted. What I want I will tell you, when you can summon up courage enough to hear and understand me." Apostrophe, Arthur Gride, venturing to regard his visitor more attentively, and perceiving that he was a young man of good mien and bearing, returned to his seat, and muttering that there were bad characters about, and that this, with former attempts upon his house, had made him nervous, requested his visitor to sit down. This, however, he declined. "Good God! I don't stand up to have you at an advantage," apostrophe said Nicholas, for Nicholas it was, as he observed a gesture of alarm on the part of Gride. "Listen to me. You are to be married tomorrow morning." Apostrophe, no, apostrophe, rejoined Gride. "Who said I was? How do you know that?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, no matter how, apostrophe, replied Nicholas, "I know it. The young lady who is to give you her hand hates and despises you. Her blood runs cold at the mention of your name. The vulture and the lamb, the rat and the dove, could not be worse matched than you and she. You see, I know her." Apostrophe, Gride looked at him, as if he were petrified with astonishment, but did not speak, perhaps lacking the power. "You and another man, Ralph Nickleby by name, have hatched this plot between you," apostrophe pursued Nicholas. "You pay him for his share in bringing about this sale of Madeline Bray. You do. A lie is trembling on your lips, I see." Apostrophe, he paused. But, Arthur making no reply, resumed again. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.